is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Welcome to the Pleasure Dome.
Okay.
I think this is the album that song relaxes on.
Okay.
But let's see what it says on allmusic.com. Strip away all the hype, controversy, and attendant craziness surrounding Frankie, most of which never reached American shores, though the equally bombastic Relax and Two Tribes both charted well. And Welcome to the Pleasure Dome holds up as an outrageously over-the-top, bizarre, but fun release. Less well-known but worthwhile cuts include By Definition Camp, Crisco Kisses, and The Only Star in Heaven, while UK smash The Power of Love is a gloriously insincere but still great hyper ballad with strings from Ann Dudley. In truth, the album's more a testament to Trevor Horn's production skills than anything else. To help out, he roped in a slew of Ian Dury's backing musicians to provide the music, along with a special guest appearance from his fellow Yes veteran Steve Howe on acoustic guitar that probably had prog rock fanatics collapsing in apoplexy. The end result was catchy, consciously modern, almost to a fault. Arena-level synth rock of the early 80s that holds up just fine today, as much an endlessly listenable product of its time as the Chin/Chapman string of glam rock hits from the early 70s. Certainly the endless series of pronouncements from the Ronald Reagan impersonator throughout automatically date the album while lending it a giddy extra layer of appeal. Even the series of covers on the album at once make no sense, and plenty of it all at once. While Edwin Starr's War didn't need redoing, Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run becomes ridiculously over-the-top explosion that even outrocks the boss. As the only member of the band actually doing anything the whole time, Paul Rutherford pipes up on backing vocals here and there, Holly Johnson needs to make a mark and does so with appropriately leering passion. He didn't quite turn out to be the new Freddie Mercury, but he makes a much better claim than most, combining a punk sneer with an ear for hyper-dramatic yelps.
All right.
Okay. I'm very intrigued. So this was released on the 29th of October, 1984. Genre is pop, and it came out on ZTT Records and was produced by Trevor Horn. It is a double album. So what we'll do is we'll treat disc one and disc two as two halves of the album. And so what we like to do is stop and pause halfway through the album and discuss halfway through. So if you are listening along, which we encourage you to do, I've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music in the show notes, so you can get it on your preferred streaming service. The first song on the album is The World Is My Oyster, and the first disc ends with the song Tag, which is sort of an unlisted track. So if you want to stop there, yeah, okay. So here is the first song. Here we go. Let's see what this is all about. Okay, and ending the first half of the album with Tag. Yeah, I don't know about this.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit of a challenge for me, too. There's a couple of moments that I thought, okay, there's a really decent beat bass line going here, but I'm having a very hard time attaching myself to it.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and I think it's because, well, for me, I'm finding it kind of exhausting. Like, it's so loud. Not loud, but, like, there's not a whole lot of dynamics, and it's just sort of like this big wall of noise, and it's just kind of coming at you, and it's just this, it's kind of overwhelming. And yeah, I am having a hard time connecting with it. The cover of War, I thought it was a strange choice to cover that song. And I sort of understand where they're coming from and why they would want to cover that is because, well, they're, you know, talking about Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher in the UK. But the original was very clear, like, it was very clearly an anti-war song, and it was, the message was very clear. This version, it was a little bit of that, but mostly dance instrumental stuff, and more of a club track than a full protest song.
Yeah, and it's a bit strange. It is a dance album.
It's a strange song to cover on a dance album.
It didn't even really become all that recognizable until, like, after the halfway point. It was sort of recognizable. I mean, so you sort of had the other thing. But if you didn't know it was, you know, the song War, you probably would have thought it was something else for most of the song.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the song, well, I never really minded the song Relax. You know, that was probably the best one so far, to be honest. Welcome to the Pleasure Dome. It didn't need to be almost 14 minutes long.
No, it didn't need to be that long. But again, it's sort of a dance track. So this is all meant for the club.
I get it.
And I never really attached myself to that sort of environment. The music associated with that sort of environment is lost to me.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I get that that's sort of the purpose of it. But generally, if songs are for the club, the artist usually doesn't put out albums. They usually put out club singles. And it was a big trend in the 80s, and I know Billy Idol did it with a lot of his songs, where they would have the album version, which was, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, but then there would be the club version or the remix, and it would be quite a bit longer. And so the club version of the song wouldn't be on the album. So I get that this music is meant for the clubs, but I would expect something for the album to be a little more truncated, a little more palatable for just sitting down and listening to something, and not necessarily something you're going to dance to.
Yeah, I guess. Hear where you're coming from. But again, they were doing something different. They were, you know, making original music that was, you know, I don't really begrudge them doing it, having a hard time getting attached to it. I did like the bass line in Welcome to the Pleasure Dome, but yes, it was too long.
Yeah, I did too. That's one thing I can say that I really liked about it is the bass line was really good. And I mean, the production, I mean, Trevor Horn is a really good producer. I mean, he did a lot of stuff. He was a member of Yes, he did the Buggles, but he produced a lot of stuff in the 80s.
Yeah, and this is probably one of the most 1980s sounding things I've listened to in a long time.
I think something that really sort of sums up how I feel about it, and I think you do too, is David Frick, who's a writer for Rolling Stone. When the album came out, he wrote that he found the album's songs too often, quote, too often merely alluring fragments, while concluding that it revels in its own subversiveness with such audacious glee that it is impossible not to be captivated, if not entirely convinced. I think that sums it up. It's like, okay, I see what they're doing, but I'm not really connecting here. In the Village Voice, Robert Crisco was less impressed. He said he called the group a truly great hype, but ultimately only a marginally competent arena rock band who don't know how to distinguish between ephemeracy and pretension. So, like, it wasn't that well received. There were a few. It was kind of a mixed reviews when it first came out, too.
You were alluding to where it's sort of strange to have this sort of music in an album format. And I think that's where it sort of ran into its tough thing, because albums get reviewed in a different way than singles do. And singles are a little more meant to sort of, you know, well, they're a little more pop. They're meant to be sort of like snippets of something that's very palatable to a wide amount of people anyway. Whereas albums are generally, again, you were saying they're a bit more of a sit down sort of thing. I appreciate what they were doing here, but album reviewers are probably not the kind of people who would know what to do with it. And I don't think we're any different.
No, exactly. I think David Frick sort of summed up how I feel about it. But sort of like, do you think, like, if it were to come out today in the way that music is now, do you think it would be a hit? Or, like, do you think, like, the clubs would catch on to it? Or
I think they probably would. It's got enough pop presence that I think it could probably, you know, hold its own. It's a very 1980s thing, but then 1980s everything is very in vogue at the moment. So this being very 1980s, hold it back really all that much. I mean, it's very dated, but it's dated in that's kind of cool again at the moment.
And you're right. You listen to, there's like a song came out a few years ago by The Weeknd. I think it's called Blinding Light or something like that. And it has it's very, very 80s sounding. So I think you're right. I think this would definitely fit in with music that's coming out today. I think it would really, if Relax were to come out, I think that would probably be a radio hit.
Probably. Yeah, I can see that.
I did find a few facts about the album that are kind of interesting, though. One is the record sleeve was actually, there was some controversy over the record sleeve. It said the cover was conceived by ZTT owner Paul Morley and illustrated by graphic artist Lo Cole. The front cover featured an illustration of the Frankie Goes to Hollywood band members. On the back of the album with it was an illustration of a large animal orgy, and the inner gatefold artwork was an image of a procession of animals entering the head of a very large phallus. The sleeve art proved controversial, and the printing company refused to print the album covers. so they had to alter the orgy image to add fig leaves to cover the animal's genitalia. So the actual printing company, who has a contract and agreed to make the album sleeve said, hey, no, we're not printing these. Because, yeah. And that's not the only controversy surrounding the album. There were actually several music videos for the song Relax. And the first official... So when I was a kid, I remember watching, I think it was Much More Music, which was sort of like a Canadian version of VH1. And I remember the video for Relax coming on. And all it was the guy, Holly Johnson, just dancing and lip syncing the song in front of like big lights, big lasers. And so when I heard that the video was banned, I thought, why?
Obviously, this isn't the version that was banned.
Exactly.
This might have been the version that they came out with because the other one was banned.
Exactly. So so the first official music video for Relax, directed by Bernard Rose and set in an S&M-themed gay nightclub at Wilton's Music Hall in London, featuring the band members accosted by Buff Leatherman, a glamorous drag queen and an obese admirer dressed up as a Roman emperor, played by actor John Dare, was allegedly banned by MTV and the BBC, prompting the recording of a second video directed by Godley and Cream in early 1984, featuring the group performing with the help of laser beams, which is the video I remember.
Godley and Cream did that. That's interesting.
Yeah, though they directed a lot of videos.
Yeah, but they're a music.
Yeah.
Good one, too.
So, yeah. So, can, like, imagine, like, in 1984, and, like, you got Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, and, like, the social conservatism really tightened up in the 80s, especially around gay culture. Because AIDS was happening and there was a big panic of around that. And so to have a music video in an S&M themed gay nightclub with it would probably not get banned now, but I can see the people at MTV
going, whoa, I don't know if I want to touch this one. Yeah.
But I do wonder if it was really banned or if they just said it was banned. Because if you say something is banned by the establishment, people are going to want. So I'm wondering if it was really banned or if it was just a marketing thing saying, hey, we've got this crazy video and they're not going to show it on TV.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. They do that quite often. It's why when they came up with the label, the parental advisory label, it actually helped sell CDs.
Yeah.
Much to the, delight of Tipper Gore, I'm quite certain.
Right. And the last sort of fact that I found was Trevor Horn is actually... He founded this ZTT Records, and he's actually responsible for signing them and making them stars, basically. And they had some really interesting artists on their label. They Roy Orbison was part of that label.
What yeah. an interesting choice there.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I don't know much about Trevor Horn, but he seems like a fascinating guy. Good producer, anyway.
Half of 10cc?
Yes. Yes, they were.
Yeah. Another good band.
Yeah. Before we get into the second half of the album, let's hear a word from our friends over at the podcast Can I Pod with Madness?
Okay,
take a listen to that.
Can I Pod with Madness? What we will be doing is looking through vintage Kerrang and Metal Hammer, all from late 80s.
I remember when someone lent me somewhere in time. And by that time, I'd heard Marillion and I'd heard Def Leppard and I heard Bon Jovi on the radio, and I thought I knew what heavy metal was. And when this started, I thought, I don't know if I can take this. It was so harsh. It was so metal. I thought, I think this is going to be too much for me. But I persevered. I pushed through.
Yeah.
And I think if you tell most Maiden fans would probably think this has got a soft album because it's got keyboards on it or synth guitars or something. But yeah, for me, it was a shock to the system.
I credit Alice Cooper with introducing me into type of music, because when I heard that, it was like
mind.
Yeah, two friends over. I was like, listen to you, like, obviously this has blown my mind, so it's going to blow your mind too, this is going to be amazing. And played it to them, and then they went, do you like heavy metal? And I was like mortified, and I've never forgotten that, because she'd been like, yes, I fucking like heavy metal, kicked over the tape player and walked out of my own room.
Okay, and ending the album with Bang. The second half was better. There were some better songs with the second half. More than, I wouldn't say it was my favorite, but
there were some things, like I thought the Born to Run was sort of interesting, their take on it. Although it wasn't that dissimilar to Springsteen's original, but it was, you know, they switched things up a little bit and did a decent job of it. Yeah, the second half is less of a dance album, and it seems to be more of an actual, almost a concept album.
Yeah, this is the thing that I think about with double albums, is the most of the time with double albums, they really could be cut down to a single album. Like, it has to be really special to be a double album. Sometimes it's just not justified or not warranted.
No, not everything can be The Wall.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, speaking of The Wall, was it The Ballad of 32? That was very Pink Floyd.
It really was. You were thinking the same thing. That's funny. Yeah. I guess it was that obvious. Lots of Pink Floyd influence in that one, yeah. Yeah, again, I think The Only Star in Heaven, that was pretty funky. I guess it was all right.
That was pretty good, yeah. What was it? I think it was Crisco Kisses, maybe? That sounded a lot like, remember when we did the Adam and the Ants album?
Oh, yes.
It sounded very similar to that. I think it was that song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking, The Only Star in Heaven, some of that guitar work, I was wondering if that's where Steve Howe was.
Well, Steve Howe only played on, he played acoustic guitar on the first track, Welcome to the Pleasure Dome.
Oh, okay.
That's the only song that
interesting,
he's on.
Because yeah. It sounded a lot like his sort of style, the guitar playing in The Only Star in Heaven, at least in the early part of it. It was really cool. Yeah, that song was, it was all right. I'd say it was probably a decent song. It's definitely one of the better ones on the album, I think. But yeah, overall, this is, I don't know. It was sort of hard to sit through. I was kind of looking forward to the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. If I'm being honest, yeah, I agree. It picked up a little in the second half. The second half was almost a relief. It's like, okay, I can, you know, kind of get into this. But, like, I think if I were to sequence the album, I would probably put Relax first song, and then I would probably take off the two covers, War and Born to Run.
Although Fury was also a bit of a cover. It was very...
Yeah.
It was very short. It was the...
Was it? Mercy Cross the... Something Cross the...
Send Mercy. Me Across the Mersey or something yeah. like that. Yeah.
It was, I think that's Jerry and the Pacemakers. Which I understand. Like, this band, Frankie Goes Out, they're also from Liverpool. So I guess that's sort of a nod to their hometown. So I guess that's why they sort of did that. I always thought that was odd too, but it's like, oh, okay, they're from Liverpool. So that's sort of, that song is probably, probably grew up with that song. So, but yeah, I think this could really be cut down to a really good, solid single album.
Even then, I don't think it'd be my favorite thing on the,
it wouldn't
on
be,
the radio.
No, it wouldn't be my favorite, but I think it could be, I think there's,
it would be a better listen, I think.
Yeah, it just needs to be, like, they just need to trim the fat, really. Like, I don't think the title track, like I said, doesn't need to be 14 minutes long. So I don't know. I think it could be better. I think it could, if I were producing, if I were Trevor Horn, and that's kind of what I would sort of aim for, is like, okay, I don't think there's enough here for a double album. I don't think we have to put everything out. And this is their debut album too. So for a debut album to be a double album, that's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of what confused a lot of album reviewers at the time. I guess it's significant for what it was at the time. It's just not for me.
So this might be an impossible task, but what are your three favorite songs?
Oh, I was already sort of thinking about it. Think The Only Star in Heaven, Ballad of 32, just because it was basically Pink Floyd. and I guess, I don't know, I kind of enjoyed Born to Run.
Yeah, I think for me, it's probably Relax. Yeah, Only Star in Heaven, and I'll go with, yeah, the Ballad of 32, because I like the Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're pretty much lined up. Yeah, it's very hard to pick something on a that hot on, but...
Yeah. So I think I know the answer, but, like, would you listen to this again?
Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to say probably not, too. There were some okay stuff on here, but overall, it's just not my thing. I mean, respect what they do. You know, it's they're making their art, and, you know, that's great, but it's just not for me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of feel the same way. It's just, I respect what they're putting out, and I kind of... I can't see it really becoming anything I'd...
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's perfectly summed up. Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same. So I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. If you want to help out the show, just spread the word and tell your friends about the show. Text one friend who you think would... want to listen to this and would be into it, and just let them know that we exist, and let them discover it for themselves. And that would really help us out. And you can also help us out if you want to go to Patreon, patreon.com/polyphonicpress. You can get these episodes the day before they go live, and pick an album for us to review. And lots of cool stuff there. And you can also check out polyphonicpress.com and get our whole catalog of all the episodes and all the albums that we've reviewed so far. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.